Good evening. You're listening to The Truth Tank, and I'm your host, The Tank. If this is your first time listening to The Truth Tank, a big welcome. If you are a repeat listener, welcome back. If you'd like to support the show, hit the subscribe button on iTunes, Podbean, or wherever else you get your podcasts from. Follow the Facebook and Instagram pages, or leave a review. So on tonight's show, we're going to be having a look at the 2023 Academy Awards. My next couple of episodes are still in the works. Research is getting there, but things are moving pretty slowly. I'm trying to get things done as quickly as possible, but at the moment, it's been pretty challenging. I've got a computer that doesn't want to work, and I do apologize for any audio issues on this episode. I've spent 35 minutes trying to get this recording to work properly. GarageBand is about to shit itself, along with my computer, so I tried everything I could think of to try and get it to work properly, but if there are some discrepancies in the audio or some quality issues, I do apologize. So without any further ado, let's get into tonight's show. This is episode 46 of The Truth Tank. This is episode 47 of The Truth Tank. This is episode 48 of The Truth Tank. The Academy Awards 2023. So one thing I will say for the Oscars this year is it lacked any drama. It was pretty steady, a little boring, you might say, compared to last year's slap. There was none of that this year, so it was a pretty toned-down Academy Awards compared to the last couple of years. One thing I will say for the Oscars this year is that they were trying hard to bring it back to the old golden days of Hollywood. I did appreciate the set design and the direction they were going visually. There was a nod to the old 1920s, 30s, and 40s Hollywood with the props in the old cinema. That was definitely one of the themes this year, was the return to cinema, especially after 2 years of cinema closures and movie delays and movies going to streaming services rather than the big screen. So there was definitely a nod to the triumphant return of cinema. I did really appreciate the nod to the golden age of cinema, especially the Art Deco cinemas of the 1920s, 30s, and 40s. I liked the Art Deco font and the set design. I did like the old theatre facade they had. It was a nice nod to the golden age of Hollywood and cinema. But unfortunately, that is brushed aside when the very unfunny Jimmy Kimmel takes the stage. Right off the bat, he was pretty unfunny. He had his moments, I'll give him that. There were a couple of really good jokes. The opening monologue / extra long joke wore pretty thin. The Academy's always complaining about the length of the Academy Awards, but they don't really do much to try and change it. If they cut down the opening monologue / joke, they would have saved themselves about 10 to 12 minutes. He launched into jokes about most of the people nominated, which I guess is a good way to open the show. It breaks the ice, loosens the crowd up, especially after the tensions of 2022. Some of his jokes did go over the heads of a lot of the international audience. There was a lot of Americanized jokes that I don't think everybody in the audience found funny, or people watching at home. It was a little over the top and a little tedious, especially when he had a go at Steven Spielberg, because there wouldn't really be the modern day blockbuster if it wasn't for him. And he's been a Academy member and passionate filmmaker for, what was it, like nearly six decades now. He's directed some of the best movies ever made. You know, the top 100 films, half of them are his. I know it's a joke, but, you know, give the guy a little respect. I thought the Steven Spielberg, Seth Rogen joke was a little over the top and a little disrespectful. I don't particularly find Jimmy Kimmel very funny. I think he's a bit of a wanker. I think he tries a little too hard to make jokes stick. Jimmy Kimmel rides that very fine line of being insulting in some of his jokes, and I think some of them were a little disrespectful. But then he does redeem himself by taking the piss out of Will Smith and last year's Oscars and the lack of security after the slap. I think his joke went something like, what happened at last year's Academy Awards when a nominee assaulted a presenter. What happened? Nothing. 20 minutes later, we gave him a Oscar for Best Actor and a standing ovation after a 16-minute rambling speech. I got the sense the Academy was trying to apologize and make up for the clusterfuck of last year via a joke. They were trying to break the ice right off the bat and forget the 2022 Oscars and all the negative hype around the Academy and the lack of action after Will Smith assaulted Chris Rock. Why was he allowed to stay? He should have been escorted out and arrested. The hypocrites in the audience and the Academy gave him a standing ovation and put up with that rambling attempt at a speech where he waffled on about God, love, light, and being a protector. How's Will Smith's career going at the moment? He hasn't done himself any favours. A lot of people I talk to can't watch any of his previous movies because of what he did at the Oscars. I'm finding it hard to watch a Will Smith movie now and not cringe. Guy's shown his true colours. That genie can't be put back in the bottle. It's a little Aladdin reference for you. So that aspect of the opening monologue was okay, breaking the ice with the joke from last year. I did find the Babylon joke pretty funny, about $100 million flop. I don't know anyone who likes that movie. I haven't read many positive reviews on it. I don't know many people who've even sat through it, all 3 hours and 12 minutes of it. It was just, what did Kimmel say? It was $100 million waste of money. I will admit the James Cameron joke was pretty funny. The Tom Cruise joke was kind of funny. It was a little ironic considering he's the man that saved cinema and brought crowds of people back to the movies to see Top Gun Maverick. Hollywood should probably be thanking him rather than making jokes about him. Some jokes were funny, some missed the mark. Biggest issue with the jokes is there were too many of them and it just added too much time to the show. And as I said before, the Academy keeps on going on about running length and trying to cut down on time, yet it wasted about 10 to 12 minutes with an unnecessary stand-up show. It's supposed to be an awards ceremony celebrating film, not stand-up comedy. As much as I don't like Jimmy Kimmel, the Will Smith jokes were pretty funny and rightfully deserved. He shouldn't be forgotten what he did, and he shouldn't get away with it. If he's fucked his career because of it, that's his problem. Let him live with the consequences of his own actions. A lot of people in Hollywood seem to get away with a lot of shit these days, and this is a mess made by Will Smith and Will Smith only. So after the 10 or 15 minute stand-up comedy routine, we finally get into the award show. First award of the night was for Best Animation, which went to Pinocchio and Guillermo del Toro, who has won several Oscars in the past. One of the highlights of the night was Best Supporting Actor. Best Supporting Actor went to Ki-Hu Kwon. I hope I'm saying his name right. Better known to Indiana Jones fans as Short Round. It was nice to see him. I haven't seen him in a movie in a very long time. I haven't seen The Goonies, unfortunately, so the only thing I know him from is Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. He starred in Everything Everywhere All the Time. He generally seemed pretty blown away by his win. I liked his acceptance speech. It wasn't too pretentious. It wasn't too long. He was generally emotional. He got very emotional, he started to cry, he was very overjoyed with winning Best Supporting Actor. I'd liked his speech, I liked what he said at the end. He didn't make the speech all about himself, he acknowledged his family and those people who had helped him get there. I like how he ended it by saying, never give up on your dreams. I think it's a very important message. I liked his speech, it was a lot more tolerable than Viola Davis's tirade about actors and actresses are the only ones that get to get up in the morning and go to work and do something that they love. It was a much more emotional and heartfelt acceptance speech than the usual typical self-entitled, self-absorbed, elitist drivel that a lot of celebrities spew on stage every year. Best Supporting Actor was followed up by Best Supporting Actress, and that went to Jamie Lee Curtis, who gave another emotional acceptance speech. She also seemed to be pretty surprised. That was for Everything Everywhere All the Time. Angela Bassett didn't look too pleased with her win. She refused to stand during her acceptance speech, which is a little disrespectful. She had that resting bitch face. She didn't look too impressed that she didn't win. which unfortunately doesn't do the Oscars brand much favour. For years, people have said actors and actresses are only really in it for themselves and they only really give a shit about their own inflated sense of importance. Some of them generally get pleased and excited for other people, and there's others that just sit there and sulk because they couldn't get the gold shiny thing and walk up on stage in front of all the lights and cameras. The other big annoyance with the Academy Awards is the previews of all the best films scattered out throughout the night. Cut that out, you cut another 10 minutes out of the show. Same goes for the best songs. We don't need to hear all the songs throughout the night. Cut that out and you save yourself 40 minutes of running time. It's always overdone, it's very pretentious, and it gets pretty cringy. Sound and music play a big part of the cinematic experience, but we can just look these songs up on Spotify or YouTube. We don't need every one of them performed live. Cut it out, save yourself 40 minutes, move on with the show. I will say I do commend the Academy this year for not overly pushing agendas and themes on the Oscars this year. It seemed to be very much more stripped back than previous years. They seem to get the balance between glitz and glamour, social messaging, and actually celebrating the films, actors and actresses and directors and producers and writers just right. In other years, it's been all about politics and social messaging and which diversity group needs a spotlight. There was a little bit of messaging and politics sprinkled throughout this Academy Awards, but it was definitely dialed back from previous years, especially from last year and the year before. The 2021 Oscars was so blatantly political, it was virtually unwatchable. Where they do get the balance right this time around, and maybe the Academy has been listening to fans and critics on social media, maybe they are very concerned about losing viewers, and maybe they made that proactive choice to get rid of politics and all that other bullshit that has infected the Oscars. Make it about the movies again, and people won't turn off in the millions halfway through the show. So we'll have to say it was a much more enjoyable Academy Awards experience than probably the past 5 to 7 years. It seemed relevant again. It seemed like it was more about the movies, and yes, they did favour a couple of films over the majority. There was the blatant snubs, there was the blatant themes, and the blatant favouritism between two films, which I'll get into a bit later. The other thing that's very annoying about the Academy Awards, especially this year, compared to other years, is I haven't really heard of many of the movies nominated or seen them. I've only seen a few. Some of the shorts and best documentary nominations I've never even heard of. I would like to see some of those movies. They look pretty interesting. But where do you find these movies? You can't seem to buy them. They don't appear on streaming services. So where do you find them? How does the Academy find them? I'm sure there's somewhere where you can view them, but it seems a little not strange. I'm not quite sure of the word I'm looking for. It is weird that they pick a lot of films and documentaries that not a lot of people have seen. Or maybe it's just me. Maybe I've just been living under a rock for the past couple of years and haven't really paid attention. The Best Documentary winner seemed pretty deserving. Navalny won Best Documentary. It seemed pretty deserving and pretty current given what's happening in the Ukraine, which for the most part Hollywood seems to have forgotten about. There were a few references to Ukraine. Some of the people in attendance were wearing blue ribbons, which was for a hashtag refugees foundation. But I didn't see any blue and yellow ribbons like last year in support of Ukraine. It was fitting that Navalny won, which included Navalny's wife. The crew lived and worked out of an undisclosed location in Germany. Navalny's wife had a pretty heartfelt and touching tribute to her husband. And once again, she had a message about not giving up and keep on fighting the good fight even when you're up against tyrants, which highlights the importance of the film and the win for Navalny. Because if people like Navalny don't stand up to people like Putin and other tyrants, we're going to be living in a much darker world. If you want to look at that from the side of social messaging or politics, yes, I guess you can say that was a political nod for the Academy. If you want to go with the Oscars are rigged, you could definitely say that Navalny winning Best Documentary could have been rigged to bring more attention to Ukraine, but at the same time, that's not necessarily a bad thing, is it? I mean, it's getting the message out there, and some of the other films it was up against didn't look quite as engaging or quite as important. And given what the cast and crew had to go through, and not to exaggerate that some of their lives may or could be potentially in danger because of them making this film, isn't too much of an understatement. So if someone makes a movie about the leader of the Russian opposition, a man that Putin has allegedly tried to have assassinated several times, and a man he has had locked up, and his media organization labeled as a terrorist group, the chances of a reprisal are probably pretty high. But that type of political messaging in the Oscars, I don't mind, as long as it's not this red tie versus blue tie, Democrat, Republican bullshit, which side is better, even though they're both two sides of a very corrupt coin that come out of the same factory. When it's about politics and social issues that really matter and that have potential consequences for the lives of millions of people, it's a worthy cause. I'll give the politics a pass this year. The war in Ukraine means something. Lives are at risk. It was kind of a weird Academy Awards this year. There were some very emotional acceptance speeches and a lot of worthy actors and actresses that got recognized that have been ignored in the past. But at the same time, you could also tell the Academy wanted to brush over anything too dramatic. And after an emotional, dramatic speech or segment of the Oscars, it would always come back to a joke. The next award went to An Irish Goodbye. I think it was Best Short Film or Best Short Documentary. The cast sang Happy Birthday to one of the stars of the show, which was pretty cool for him, I guess. Having all those celebrities and famous people sing Happy Birthday to you on national television. Best Cinematographer, I think this marked the, I think, one of the first awards for Elvis, and it also marked one of the first snubs for Elvis. Best Cinematography went to All Quiet on the Western Front, which was probably no surprise when you see what a war movie looks like when they film it, as opposed to the final film, where it's all dark and grey and the colours have been desaturated and it looks half documentary. So that wasn't too much of a surprise that All Quiet on the Western Front won. Unfortunately, Elvis missed out, but it wouldn't be the last time it missed out on an award. So this brings us to the donkey from the Banshees of the Inner Sheeran. Jimmy Kimmel brings a donkey out on stage. I'm sure this is all passed by animal rights, and the donkey wasn't too stressed or frightened by the noise or the lights. I'm not sure how I feel about them bringing a animal onto the stage as part of a joke. I mean, I know Jimmy Kimmel isn't particularly funny, but there's prop comedy and then there's prop comedy. Colin Farrell did seem pretty excited to see his co-star again. It would have been cool if he ran up on stage and gave him a hug. And this brings us to the first superhero win of the night, and that was Black Panther for Best Costume Design. I haven't seen Black Panther Wakanda Forever. As I've said on a previous show, I'm not sitting through a 2 hour and 40 something minute Marvel movie. It was kind of surprising. Superhero movies have been nominated for Academy Awards in the past. Black Panther Wakanda Forever was nominated this year along with The Batman. I'm not sure any Marvel movie deserves to be nominated for an Academy Award. Yeah, maybe for costumes and stuff, but superhero movies now seem to be so heavily digital. You don't really think of them as having physical costumes anymore. You just think of a bunch of actors wearing tight blue suits and everything else is filled in with visual effects. So it was a bit surprising that that won over a movie like Elvis that is recreating a time period in history, and especially such an iconic figure such as Elvis Presley, because the costumes in that are incredible. They recreated a lot of the most famous costumes Elvis wore in perfect detail. Some of the elaborate sequence costumes he wears in the later half of his life were recreated perfectly on screen. It must have taken hours to design and create them. There were a couple of other movies I thought would have won for best costume. And this always kind of seems to be where sci-fi movies seem to prevail in the visual effects and costume area. Because you can just go all out and you can be as creative as you want, but then you have to back that up with actually physically creating the costumes for the actors to wear. I was a little surprised that Black Panther Wakanda Forever won best costume design, but at the same time, it didn't really have much competition. Some of the other nominees were Babylon, and yeah, I'm sure it has some good costumes, just not doesn't have the level of creativity that an action superhero sci-fi movie has. Miss Harris Goes to Paris, never heard of that. Everything Everywhere All at Once, haven't seen that, but it does look like an interesting movie. Some of the costumes in that were pretty out there. I personally would have favoured Elvis, but you know, my opinion doesn't really matter. Doesn't really count for much. I'm not on the Academy, so really who gives a fuck. Then again, the costumes in Black Panther did look pretty impressive compared to Babylon or Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris. There's a lot of racial equality in this year's Academy Awards. There's a big focus on Indian culture. There was a couple of Bollywood performances that were pretty entertaining. They were very colourful. The Bollywood film RRR was nominated, and that was probably the best song performance of the night. That and the David Byrne song, can't remember what it was called, but the song from RRR was very entertaining. There were a few Indian winners at this year's Academy Awards. This is one of the first years I can remember where they've had a Bollywood film. I know the Bollywood film industry is bigger than Hollywood. It does its own thing. It pumps out more movies than Hollywood does or any other film industry does per year. Some of their movies are visually spectacular. They're very big and bold. Hollywood could probably learn a lot from Bollywood. We also got a glimpse of the Hollywood Museum in California. It's supposed to be this great magical museum with all this memorabilia from some of the most iconic films in Hollywood over the past 100 years. They have C-3PO and R2-D2 there. But the trailer they had for it definitely overdid it on diversity. They had every diverse group. They had black, white, straight, queer, trans, non-binary. The focus for the museum seems to be telling stories that were diverse and celebrated all storytelling cultures. And this brings up one of the biggest winners of the night, and that was All Quiet on the Western Front, a Netflix film from Germany. I'm not sure if this version of All Quiet is a remake of the original film or based on the book, or both. It looks pretty good. I haven't had time to see it yet. It's been on my Netflix list for a while. It wasn't the only Netflix-nominated film. There were a lot of Netflix films nominated this year, more than previous years, it felt like. Which is good, because it definitely shakes up the system, and Netflix is proving that these old studios aren't as relevant or dominant anymore. There's a new kid on the block. Streaming service films are being taken seriously. They can make Oscar-quality films. And if the big studios aren't going to produce them, Netflix is going to. And you can say what you want about streaming services and the quality of their films. No one can deny that they're definitely making waves in the old structured way films used to be produced. It's good. It gets these stories out there. It's producing stories that would have been overlooked by big studios because they were either unprofitable or too expensive. Netflix definitely likes to gamble. It likes to take chances on these films, and All Quiet on the Western Front definitely paid off. I'm going to watch it this weekend, actually. I'll put it in my diary. Yeah, All Quiet on the Western Front won Best Foreign Film. This has happened a couple of years in a row now, where you have a film that is a foreign non-speaking film that gets nominated for Best Foreign Film and then again for Best Picture. Now, is that fair to other films that want to get nominated? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know if there's a set number of films the Academy has to pick for Best Picture. Can you have 5? Can you have 10? Can you have 12? Which I'm pretty sure in previous years they've had more nominations. I think there was seven or eight 1 year, and this year I think there was five, maybe six. Avatar: The Way of Water was one of them, and I'll have an episode on that coming out pretty soon, which is good because it's a big sci-fi blockbuster that has been nominated for Best Picture alongside a foreign war film like All Quiet on the Western Front, quirky sci-fi film like Everything Everywhere All the Time, a unorthodox biopic like Elvis, and a boring, overly dramatic film like Tar. Which a lot of the Best Picture nominations this year were pretty different, which I'll get into a bit later. All Quiet on the Western Front won Best Foreign Film, which brings up the question, should a film that gets nominated for Best Picture then get another nomination for Best Foreign Film, even if it is a foreign film? Is that fair? Is there a possibility that it wins both Best Foreign Film and Best Picture? Because if it does win Best Foreign Film, it's obviously of a certain caliber that it can take out the Best Picture. But in reality, that's probably not going to happen, because it's obviously not the way the Academy works. And the Oscars does appear a little rigged. There's always that favourite film that pulls off that surprise win, which I'll get into a bit later. On the flip side of that coin, if the movie is good enough to get nominated for Best Foreign Film, should it just get a Best Picture nomination and not a foreign film, which would open the door for another film to win? I'm sure there's a process around how these things work. It just seems a little weird. It does feel like double dipping, that one film can be nominated twice for essentially the same award. And just because the film's not in English doesn't necessarily mean that it should be in the foreign film category. And as it turned out, All Quiet on the Western Front was definitely a favourite of the Academy this year. It won a fair few awards, and there was definitely a conflict brewing between All Quiet on the Western Front and Everything Everywhere All the Time, which seems to be one of the tactics employed by the Academy, either to get people interested and to continue watching, or to create some drama between the nominated films. Coming back to social messaging for a bit, this brings up Best Documentary Short, which went to The Elephant Whisperers. It had political messaging, but its political messaging I think is important and I definitely agree with. It highlights animal rights, in this case elephants, and indigenous cultures that look after them. It was a bit disrespectful during the acceptance speech. One of the winners talked for a bit, and when the other winner went to say a few words, they completely cut the mic, and she was basically talking to the room, and nobody could hear her, which is a bit disrespectful. They don't cut the best actor or actress or best picture. They are allowed to waffle on for 15 minutes if they like last year in Will Smith rambling for, was it 16 or 18 minutes about nonsensical shit. No one cut his mic or escorted him off the stage for taking up too much time. If they want to have a bit more balance and equality in the Academy Awards, they need to treat the most famous Best Actor and Actress winners the same as everybody else, even if you don't know them or not. So this brings us to one of the weirdest song performances I've seen at the Academy Awards in a very long time, and that was the very stripped-back Nirvana-esque performance of Hold My Hand by Lady Gaga. She took off the elaborate dress and all the makeup, put on a pair of ripped black jeans and a black t-shirt, and played a very stripped back live performance. I thought it sucked. The sound quality was dreadful. It didn't sound much like the song. Her vocals were too loud. You couldn't really hear the instruments. If it was a acoustic unplugged session, it might have been a bit better. But she had a drummer, a bass, and an electric guitar, and a piano. And you couldn't really hear much of the guitar or the bass. You could kind of hear the drums and the piano, and it didn't sound very good. Lady Gaga has a good voice, but this is a very ill-conceived performance. It's almost like they didn't do a sound check or rehearse it before. No one twigged that it might not translate that well. No one can hear it from past the third or fourth row. Because if it didn't sound good on TV, I guarantee you it didn't sound good in real life. Hugh Grant's joke, pretty much taking the piss out of himself, is pretty funny. I always thought he was a bit of a pompous wanker, but I've liked his past couple of roles where he plays sleazy scumbags. He always had that bit of a scumbagginess about him. But in recent years, he's gone away from that mainstream romantic comedy roles into a lot more darker kind of comedies like The Gentleman, where he plays a scumbag. Pretty much called himself a ball bag on live television. That was pretty funny. Alongside Andy McDowell, who's aged pretty well. After Hugh Grant's scrotum moisturizer joke, came the award for best production design. And this is another hard category, like costume design, is how do you choose? The movies nominated are also different. You have dramas, period films, sci-fi, quirky comedies. How do you pick a winner where all the nominations are so vastly different and so vastly creative? It's a very hard job to do. Each has their own unique design points. On the one hand, you have a historical film that recreates real events or landscapes that there are visual records of. How do you compare that with a sci-fi film like Dune, where no imagination has been spared to create a new world? How do you compare that to a standard drama or a comedy? All Quiet on the Western Front won for best production design. Didn't come as much as a surprise. It's recreating the battlefields of World War I. So in one sense, you have to use your imagination to come up with a realistic-looking set. But on the other hand, you also need imagination to try and pull it off realistically and do it a little differently than we've seen many times before. And you have that historical record, you have photos and video of World War I battlefields. And at this stage in the night, it won a few awards, so we can definitely see the favoritism of the Academy coming through in All Quiet on the Western Front. Netflix wins again, and studios should be scared. Very scared. Streaming services are coming for the prestige of the studios. The studios should better watch out. Whether you're a lover or a hater, no one can deny that Elizabeth Banks is great at making a fool out of herself. She came out on stage to present the award for Best Visual Effects in basically a giant black and white bow tie dress, which she nearly fell over and went arse over head. But she laughed it off and turned it around. She was also accompanied on stage by a real-life cocaine bear. She presented the award for Best Visual Effects and pointed out that if she had made Cocaine Bear without visual effects, that's what they would have looked like. The bear also helped detract from the near face plant on the stage in front of millions of people. She did look like she had done a fair bit of coke herself. Her voice was very croaky, and she looked like she'd been up for 3 days. She might have been recovering from a cold or something, or she might have been doing blow in the back. Unsurprisingly, Avatar The Way of Water won for Best Visual Effects. I don't think there was much competition for it. Avatar didn't win a hell of a lot this year. How do you overlook a film that is 90% special effects in the visual effects category? You know, Avatar had more visual effects in it than I think all the nominations combined. So it shouldn't have been much of a surprise when it won. It also marked the first win for Avatar. For all the bad jokes and Oscar cringiness, when the cocaine bear started crawling down the aisles, it was pretty funny. It's also a miracle that whoever was inside the bear outfit didn't fall over or fall down the stairs. It wouldn't have been easy trying to see in that costume. While the cocaine bear was crawling around the aisles, you got a quick glimpse of that very stuck-up looking woman wearing that white veil, or the cloud around her head, and the complete arrogance of her to wear that while sitting, because it blocked out the view of everyone behind her, and the guy that was sitting next to her had to sit on the side, so he's probably got a very sore back this morning because of her. You would think if you had such a ridiculous foot-and-a-half-tall veil that went all around your head and covered most of your shoulders that you'd take it off when you were seated. Not only for courtesy's sake, but for comfort. She had this stuck-up, entitled look on her face. She looked like a real bitch. I can't remember her name, and I don't really want to look her up. But she wasn't the only one to have ridiculous headwear. High hairstyle seemed to be in, and hair bling. These semi-hair headdress-looking things a lot of women were wearing. Having your hair up, especially when there's people sitting behind you, was pretty rude. And that goes double for the woman with the white veil. Speaking of trends in the Oscars, there was definitely a trend to the women's outfits. A lot of them had their boobs hanging out, pretty much. Very low-cut V-necked dresses were in. Lots of strapless dresses that just cover the bottom of the nipple area. It was a real miracle that there was no wardrobe malfunctions, because some of those outfits were fucking ridiculous. Like, you're at the Oscars, people know who you are, do you really need any more attention on you? Speaking of bling, Rihanna's performance was pretty decent. I'll give her that. She can definitely put on a show. I like that. The black pants and the sequins, that all look very cool. Then came the Best Adapted Screenplay, which surprisingly that wasn't All Quiet on the Western Front. But surprisingly, or unsurprisingly, it went to Women Talking, a film I haven't seen. I'm pretty sure that was the only award that movie was nominated for. The Academy definitely favours one or two films over everything else. There's the films that get nominated that get completely snubbed every year, and there's the two they favour. But there's always that random one that wins one award and doesn't get either nominated or win for anything else. And this year it was Women Talking. So it does kind of come off like they chose that for the sake of the political messaging behind it, female empowerment and all that. Don't give a shit either way. There were a couple of other movies nominated from books that appear to be a lot more complex than Women Talking. But anyway, I'm rambling, moving on. Everyone's favourite film from last year, Top Gun Maverick, finally won an Academy Award for Best Sound. Realistically, it probably should have won for Best Picture as well, considering that movie did save cinema. It saved movies and the theatrical experience. It brought people back to the cinema. So it probably was a good idea and a stroke of genius delaying that movie till it could have a proper theatrical release. But once again, like visual effects and production design, how do you choose what film has the best sound when you have an action film like Top Gun up against a period drama that's also kind of a musical and Elvis and, you know, a sci-fi movie? How do you choose? It's a very broad, diverse category. I think the Academy Awards needs more categories and more awards. How do you compare some of these films? How do you compare Top Gun to Elvis? How do you compare Elvis to Avatar? How do you compare Avatar to All Quiet on the Western Front? They probably need a whole separate award show for action and sci-fi and comedy films. How do you choose when there are so many great diverse films to choose from that are all completely different? I would like to find out how they pick some of the winners. And going back to what I was saying last year on Ding Dong Oscars Dead, it'd be nice if they did a documentary showing how that process works. How does the Academy, one, agree on a nomination? How many votes do they need? What are the criteria that it needs to meet? And two, how do they choose the overall winner? Why do they agree on Top Gun and not Elvis? Is it the difficulty in capturing the sound or creating the sound or balancing the sound of jets so you don't blow your eardrums and speakers out of theatres? Or is it the way it is used to help move the story along? I don't know, this is me thinking out loud. RRR wins again. In my opinion, the guy in the green jacket who got the Oscar for RRR was probably the best dressed male there. Wouldn't mind one of those jackets, maybe in blue. So this brings us down to the serious end of the awards ceremony, and that is the In Memoriam. John Travolta got very emotional. He lost a few friends in the past year, Olivia Newton-John and Kirstie Alley. John Travolta's had a pretty rough run the last couple of years. I'd like to see him in a lot more movies too. He's another forgotten casualty of Hollywood. He makes his yearly appearance at the Academy Awards, but he hasn't been in a movie that's got a theatrical release in quite a while, which is a shame. He's a talented actor. I've always enjoyed his movies. There was one omission from the In Memoriam that got me a little annoyed, and that was Tom Sizemore. Maybe this is due to him only recently passing. This has happened in other years and they've copped a lot of shit for it. If I was to guess, I'd say that the Academy probably has this planned about a month before the ceremony. And this year we've had a lot of celebrities die, because he wasn't the only one that wasn't included. So maybe there is a cutoff point. He only passed a week and a bit ago, so maybe that was too quick to be included in this year. One inclusion in the In Memoriam that I was a little shocked at was Wolfgang Petersen. I had no idea he had died. I was always a big fan of his. He made some huge movies in the 90s and 2000s, and going back to Dust Boat in, what was that, the early 80s. Troy is one of my favourite films. I've seen that movie fucking 40 times at least. He didn't make another Hollywood movie after Poseidon in 2006. He made a German film a few years ago, but that was the only thing he made in nearly 20 years, and he died of pancreatic cancer. He made one of my favourite Harrison Ford films, Air Force One, which I watched the other night. It was on TV, and I got talking about him and thinking about Wolfgang Petersen, and I find out a couple of days later that he's recently died. Rest in peace, Wolfgang Petersen. By this point in the show, the chances of Elvis winning an Academy Award looked pretty slim. It was one of my favourite films from last year, and despite it being nominated for several Academy Awards, including Best Picture and Best Actor, hope was fading fast that it was going to win anything. It definitely looked like it got snubbed. I don't think the Academy likes Baz Luhrmann or his unique, overly flamboyant films. I loved Elvis, and I think if this was just a stock standard biopic directed by anyone else, it probably would have been pretty average. It would have been your boring run-of-the-mill biopic with some music in it. Bohemian Rhapsody is a great film, but it's a stock standard biopic. It's not much different from the dozens of other biopics we've seen about musicians and bands over the last 30 or so years. Elvis definitely has its own unique voice. It's got a bright, flamboyant style. It helps to bring the story of Elvis to the big screen and gives it its own unique flair and flamboyance that I think the King would be probably pretty proud of. In my opinion, I don't think the Academy likes Baz Luhrmann, and they seem to snub all the Australian nominees this year. So is the Academy racist? Do they not like Australians? Kate got snubbed. Baz got snubbed. The guy from Brisbane who made the short claymation film got snubbed. He wasn't expecting to get nominated, and he was going up against some pretty tough competition. There was a very distinctive anti-Australian pattern that formed over the night. There also wasn't a lot of cutting back to the crowd every 5 minutes like there has been in previous years to see the reactions of on people's faces laughing to jokes. They seemed to show mainly the people who were nominated and a couple of other people that were either mentioned or in close proximity that looked good. They didn't seem to cut back to the crowd and have lingering shots in the crowd like they have in previous years, whether this was done for time constraints. They didn't show Nicole Kidman every 5 minutes and her reacting to something. Whether this was because of the Will Smith slap of last year, maybe they wanted to keep the focus more on the presenter and less about crowd reaction, or in the case of Will, lack of reaction. As I mentioned before, there is a definite conflict in the Academy Awards. It seems to be a bit more prevalent in the last 10 or so years. The Academy definitely seems to favour two films over the rest of the nominees. They like to play these two films off against each other. And this year it was All Quiet on the Western Front versus Everything Everywhere All the Time. Last year it was Coda and Power of the Dog. One film cleans up early. It wins a lot of the technical awards, or it wins Best Actor and Best Actress. This year it was Everything Everywhere All the Time. And then after a while, during the technical categories, it was All Quiet on the Western Front. Then Everything Everywhere All the Time won, then All Quiet won. And just when you think a film like All Quiet on the Western Front has a leg up on Everything Everywhere All the Time, Everywhere All the Time comes out of the blue, wins a couple of technical awards, and now the competition is on. The stakes have leveled themselves out. Who's going to win? Because they're both about even. And just when you think All Quiet on the Western Front will win Best Picture, then you realise, oh, wait, it's already won Best Foreign Film, so it probably can't win twice in a row, because that would cause a controversy and be probably too edgy and controversial for the Academy. Oh, no, maybe Everything Everywhere will take out Best Picture. I haven't seen it, so I can't give an opinion on it. Maybe it's an Oscar-worthy movie, or maybe it's just a film that has been favoured so heavily by the Academy. Maybe they're trying to show the world that, hey, look, we don't just do boring dramas, because Power of the Dog was pretty heavily criticized for being an exceptionally boring film. I haven't met anybody who liked that film or could get past the first 30 or so minutes. So maybe they're trying to show the world that, hey, look, we like these diverse, quirky, sci-fi action comedies as well. I also think it's probably one of the first times a sci-fi film has actually won Best Picture. I might be wrong on that, so don't quote me on it. It's a very drastic change to the typical Best Picture winner we've seen over the last couple of years. Power of the Dog last year, Parasite, Green Book, that's not in order, that's just the ones I can remember. I think Spotlight was on that list as well. It's a very dramatic right turn compared to the typical kitchen sink dramas that usually win Best Picture. So does the Academy get fixated on those two films because they generally like them, or because they're trying to cause conflict and competition? Because every year they seem to get fixated on two films, then they get micro-fixated on that film they want to see win. And this year it was Everything Everywhere All the Time. They just seem to, I don't know, all watch it and be blown away by its originality, even though the public might not think it's a great film. And like I said, I haven't seen the film, so I can't really comment on it. This is me speaking in general terms. So do the Academy generally like these films, or are they picking them for political reasons or for ratings? Or do they think they're going to like them a bit more if they pick a film outside of the typical Oscars box? Everything Everywhere All at Once won Best Director. It gets a bit confusing and hard to keep up when the same film wins all the time and you see the same people on stage. The two Daniels won, Daniel Kwan and Daniel Scheinert, won for Best Director. We'd seen these guys before. They'd won so many Oscars. By this point, it was a bit hard to keep up with what they were winning for. There was a delirious, rambling speech by one of them that went on about living your dream and the most important thing is to get stories out that don't have a chance to get seen or heard or some other bullshit. There was a bit of queer messaging sprinkled in there and how they were different growing up and some other crap. And how there's a greatness in everyone, which I would highly disagree with. I can't say there's much greatness in people like Adolf Hitler, Stalin, Putin, Saddam Hussein, or the many other deplorable people of history. Maybe he's just caught up in the emotion, but you can't call everybody great because not every human is great. And that whole thing now where everyone is special and beautiful and great, I think is a complete load of shit. Some people are just scum. Some people will never change. Some people will prey on weaker people for their own financial gain, or they feel entitled enough to victimize someone else because of their own lot in life, whether that be self-inflicted or not. Can't say I agree with everybody being great. Maybe that's all lovey-dovey in a perfect idealistic Hollywood. Hollywood tends to live in a bubble, and I think that was a bit of an example of it. Even though he seems like a nice guy, and I'm sure the movie's great, he deserves the win. I'm sure he's just caught up in the emotions of the third win at that stage, I think, or second. Going back to what I was saying about the playoff between several films and how those two films will dominate the technical categories. One is either favored in, best screenplay, best director and best picture, then one kind of fizzles out. Last year you had June dominating the technical categories, and if I had it my way, it would have won best picture and everything else for the night. And last year you had this film that no one has ever heard of called Coda, comes out of nowhere and wins best picture in this big upset. Power of the Dog had won all the dramatic category awards. It had won best director and I think best screenplay or something. But then Coda comes out of nowhere. And it's a film that I haven't seen. I didn't see it released in the cinema. I haven't seen it to buy in shops. I haven't seen it on any streaming service. It's like that movie just disappeared after it won. I don't think a lot of international audiences saw it. It's this weird, obscure film. Maybe the Academy needs to do a Academy Awards for these independent films that not a lot of people have seen or know about, and maybe do the Oscars for bigger dramatic films, then another Oscars for sci-fi, superhero, action, whatever. Because a lot of sci-fi and more dramatic action movies or action films with dramatic elements in them win a lot of the technical categories, but they always seem to miss out on Best Picture. If we go back in time to the early to mid-2000s, it was the opposite. These big, sweeping, historical epic dramas would always win Best Picture. Gladiator, drama, action, romance, cleans up at the Oscars. It got Best Picture. It was a popular film. Critics and audiences loved it. And that won. It won because it was a great film. Performances were good. Writing, directing, everything about that movie was top-notch. And people saw it, and it did make quite a bit of money. Those films used to win. Martin Scorsese's films used to win every couple of years. And from about 2010, 2011 onwards, historical epics don't seem to win anything anymore. They get nominated, but they never win Best Picture. It's always these kitchen sink dramas that end up winning Best Picture, and they all pretty much have some political or social messaging behind them. This brings us to the business end of the Academy Awards and the Best Actor Award. And that went to none other than Brendan Fraser. I haven't seen Whale. I wanted to see it. It's on the list of things to see. I kind of had a feeling Brendan Fraser was going to win. I thought it was going to be a bit of a toss-up between him and Austin Butler. Austin Butler is fucking brilliant in Elvis. He is Elvis. Brendan Fraser was always a favourite of mine in the late 90s and 2000s. I loved the Mummy movies. I even enjoyed the third Mummy movie, Tomb of the Dragon Emperor. But after that movie, he kind of disappears from Hollywood. And it is a little ironic that Brendan Fraser, the joke of Hollywood, ends up winning Best Actor. So is this Hollywood apologizing for the way they've treated him over the last 10 to 20 years? He was one of the first big names in Hollywood to talk about sexual abuse. It seems like he got blacklisted by Hollywood for bringing that to light. He definitely got shafted by Hollywood and shunned for speaking the truth. He was basically unemployable for a decade until The Whale comes along. He has this huge physical transformation, and now he wins Best Actor. And that's not taking anything away from him. I'm sure he deserved the Oscar, and I'm looking forward to seeing the film. On the one hand, Austin Butler is pretty young. He's got plenty of time to win more. His career is just getting started. But he can never win for Elvis again. I was pretty impressed with his performance as Elvis Presley. That movie is fantastic. For whatever reason, the Academy doesn't give a shit about Elvis, it doesn't want to know about it, and snubbed it the entire night. But congratulations to Brendan Fraser. Let's hope he makes more Mummy movies. Michelle Yeoh wins Best Actress for Everything Everywhere All the Time. She mentions in her speech that, ladies, you're never too old to rise to the top, which is funny coming from an actress that has dominated Hollywood and Asian cinema for the better part of 30 years. She's had a pretty good career. She's older than a lot of other people in attendance, and she's been top of her game for a very long time. She's had better careers than most of those actresses ever will, but I do get where she's coming from. Never let them tell you you're two old ladies. And you know what? That's a good message, and it is true. There is one social issue that Hollywood has steered well clear of, and that is ageism. Once you're past a certain age in Hollywood, no one wants to know you. Guess it is tougher for women than it is men, especially in the action genre, which Michelle Yeoh has spent a majority of her career. So, you know, go her. This brings us down to the epic grand finale of the 2023 Academy Awards, and that is Best Picture. And how could I not be excited about the Best Picture Award? Well, I was more excited about the person presenting it, and that was none other than my favourite actor, Harrison Ford. He was by far the highlight of the night, for me personally. It was a bit of a 50-50 split on who was going to win, All Quiet on the Western Front, or Everything Everywhere All the Time. All Quiet had previously won Best Foreign Film, so you could probably write that one off. It would have probably caused too much of controversy if it won twice. And unsurprisingly, Everything Everywhere All the Time won Best Picture. It also gave me, personally, one of the best Oscar moments in the last 20 years, if not ever. And that is the reunion between Harrison Ford and Kei Hu Kwan, aka Indiana Jones and Short Round. It was also the Temple of Doom reunion. You had Harrison Ford and Kei Hu Kwan on stage, Steven Spielberg and Katie Capshaw in the audience, as well as John Williams. The circle was complete. And that was pretty cool seeing them all in the same room together again, what, nearly 40 years after the Temple of Doom came out. Harrison Ford was the best part of the night. The reunion with him when he hands Kei Hu Kwan, aka Short Round, the Academy Award, was sincere and heartfelt. It was very genuine, and you could tell by the look on their faces that they genuinely were pleased and excited to see each other once again. It was very genuine and very heartfelt, unlike a lot of the insincere actors and actresses at the Academy Awards. There wasn't over the top or forced, which there was a lot of emotion that night. There was a lot of tears. Brendan Fraser cried, Ki Hu Kwan cried, Jamie Lee Curtis cried. It felt like a emotional and spiritual cleansing of the Academy Awards after the debacle of last year. So what better way to close the 2023 Academy Awards than the reunion of Harrison Ford and Kei Hu Kwan, Indiana Jones and Short Round? You could see those two chatting away on the side of the stage. I would love to be backstage just witnessing that happen. You could tell that was a genuine and heartfelt reunion, and it was really nice to see that, especially in a room full of actors. That was definitely the highlight of the night for me, and it was the highlight of pretty much any Academy Awards I've seen. All in all, the 2023 Academy Awards went off without too much drama or any unexpected events happening. It was a little boring on the one hand. On the other hand, that wasn't so bad given the fuck up of last year. It also didn't take itself too seriously as it has in the past. There's been a real stick jammed up the Academy's ass for the last few years. They've been very rigid. They've taken themselves ultra seriously. And this year it felt like they took the piss out of themselves. They definitely were taking the piss out of last year and the, you know, lack of security or anyone doing anything about Will Smith and how they awarded him with an Academy Award and a standing ovation, and the delusional rambling that was his acceptance speech, and how he also got a hug after assaulting a man on live television. So it seemed very fitting, and it was also pretty funny that the Oscars ended with the emotional support donkey being backstage with Jimmy Kimmel, and as he walked off, he flicked the Oscars incident board to Years Without Incident to one. That was pretty funny. It did take the piss out of itself, and it was a nice, humorous way to end, because last year definitely didn't have a happy ending. It was weird, confusing, and I don't think anyone really paid much attention to it after the slap. So all in all, Everything Everywhere All the Time was the film favoured this year by the Academy over the others. It was looking like a pretty hotly contested race between All Quiet and Everywhere, but it all went quiet for All Quiet on the Western Front. After its last win, it doesn't win anything again for the rest of the night, and everything went to Everything Everywhere All the Time. I'll have to pay attention next year to see if a similar thing happens where they play these two films off against each other. I've got a feeling it probably will. You can't have an interesting night without drama. There needs to be some type of conflict driving the drama that produces the entertainment and the big spectacular finale of who's going to win Best Picture. This year's ceremony also seemed more thought and planned out to previous years. The clusterfuck in the LA train station, that came off very underdone. It seemed very rushed. I know it was, you know, the first year of COVID, and they needed to come up with an emergency venue, but anywhere probably would have been better than there. It just, yeah, it didn't feel right. It didn't look right. And it was very awkward. This year was a lot smoother. I know I've talked a bit of shit about Jimmy Kimmel, but he wasn't that bad this year. In previous years, he's been a lot less funny. This year, I found him a lot more tolerable. It was a lot better having a host. I think the years where they got rid of the host were the most underplanned and fragmented years. They didn't run smoothly. It was very weird. You need that host every half an hour to keep steering the ship and reminding you that this is happening or this is coming up or whatever it happens to be. The years where they had multiple presenters who kind of were surrogate hosts didn't work. And the years they didn't have a host at all were just complete clusterfucks. They were a runaway train. Bring back Billy Crystal. He was by far the best Oscars host. I think Jimmy Kimmel had done it three times prior to this year. You know, and he wasn't that bad. All right, I think we'll leave it there and pick it up in the next episode. On part two of the Oscars 2023, we'll be having a look at, you guessed it, the 2023 Oscars again, but also past Best Picture voting trends and a few of the best directors that have been snubbed. Does the Academy pander to certain winners? Who won, who lost, who got snubbed? There's some big names on that list. The Oscars is political, it always has been. A big thank you to everyone who listened. So if you'd like to support True Thank, there's a couple of things you can do. Head on over to the Facebook and Instagram page, give them a follow and a like. Leave a review, it helps the show grow. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who you think might like the Truth Tank. Help spread the word. Head on over to the YouTube channel. Give it a follow. Download your favorite episodes of the Truth Tank on your preferred podcast player. Every download is appreciated. A big thank you to everyone who listened to the end. The next episode should be out in a couple of weeks. But until then, I'm the Tank. This is the Truth. May the Truth be with you. Oh,